Hi everyone, this is the Hearsay Podcast. My name is Saya and this is episode number 96. I feel like I've been so lucky lately and I've got to speak to some real long-term musical heroes like Gaz from Supergrass, Jason from Grandaddy, these bands that I've really loved so much since I was a teenager, and this one is no exception because my guest today is Michael Rother, or Michael Rother if you want to pronounce it in the German correct way, but he has publicly said that Michael Rother is okay too. Michael is the founder of the krautrock bands Neu and Harmonia. He also played in Kraftwerk for a short time in 71, so you can imagine how much his music has inspired me. We talk about this in the chat too, but his solo album Flammende Herzen is one of my most played albums at home. And if you want another beautiful listen, you should check out Harmonia's work with Brian Eno in 76 called Tracks and Traces. There's a song on there called Welcome, which is one of my absolute favourites. I chatted to Michael in Brisbane when he was here in February of this year, playing some 50 years of Neu shows, which was pretty cool. I went to the show that night and it was so amazing and everything I'd hoped it would be. I really hope that some of you got to see it. At the end of the chat, I say, enjoy your little Fairlight, which is referring to just a small gift I made him. I made him a little felt miniature Fairlight CMI, or computer musical instrument, which is a synth that was made in 1979, I think. And he used that synth quite a lot in the early 80s, especially on an album that he made called Lust, if you want to check it out. I thought I would quickly introduce some of the people we chat about in this episode, because some of them are sort of casually brought up without introduction. So here are some of the key people. Klaus Dinger is the co-founder and drummer of Neu from 1972. Conny Planck was a German audio engineer who worked with Neu, Cluster, Kraftwerk and Harmonia, and was a big creative partner of Michael's over the years. Jackie Lieberzeit was a founding member and drummer from the band Can, another important krautrock band, and someone who played drums on many of Michael's solo albums. Ralf Hütter and Florian Schneider are from Kraftwerk, and then we talk briefly about Rodelius and Mobius from the band Cluster, who Michael formed Harmonia with. So many German names. Oh, and one more. There is an artist in Germany called Herbert Grönemeyer, who is a big star. We speak about him quite a bit towards the end of the chat and his impact on Michael's career. So I'll put a link to him and all of these bands I've just mentioned in the show notes. All of them, I'd say, have really inspired me so much. So it was a real thrill to be able to talk about them with someone who was in the center of it all at the time. Another thrill is that I asked my amazing friend Kate Reed, who is also a totally huge fan of all of this music, to do the artwork for the podcast, and she happily agreed. So Michael Strange Show Story is illustrated by Kate Reed. Kate runs the label that I put my last album out through, It Records, and she has impeccable taste in music, obviously. So go check out It Records Bandcamp. I'll put a link of that in the show notes too. Link City. Remember, you can find all of the show illustrations on Instagram at Hearsay Podcast or on the Hearsay Facebook page. And please like and subscribe on iTunes. It helps the podcast be able to be found. Also, I'd love you forever. And you could write a little review if you want to. It'll be fun. Thanks again so much for listening. And please enjoy this chat with Michael Rother. You're playing in Brisbane tonight, which is very exciting. How are you feeling about the shows? Do you feel a nostalgia playing Neu songs again? Or?
The question is justified. I don't really have any feelings of nostalgia. I have maybe out of what is lack of innovation spirit. I just take the liberty of picking up old material which I like and which obviously also the audience enjoys, and mixing it with new ideas and with new technology. And it's always about, in my music, it's about ideas, not so much really about how I present the music. But I was talking to another musician the other day, and it was a Goethe talk in Sydney, and I tried to make that point clear. It's about idea, the idea which changed in the early 70s from the music I was into before, and it's still true for today. I have the feeling I have so much liberty, and I can choose from very different areas of music in which I work, like abstract music and very rhythmical music or melodical music. And I don't know, I have to remind myself from time to time that this is quite unusual, and that I should be thankful every single day for that liberty, for that freedom.
What is interesting, I've heard you talking about even back, you know, in the early Noi days, you never really thought about things like, commercial success. You were really just doing it as a compulsion for, you know, what you wanted to get out.
Yeah, but the truth is also, I would never have rejected success.
Yeah, of course.
It was just, but the basic truth is, it was about music. And then, because I loved what we were doing, I just simply deducted. I thought, okay, everybody will also love it. Mm. And that was not always the case. Maybe we'll talk about Harmonia, which was a painful experience, because my love for the music of Harmonia at the time was not shared by the audience, not by many. I mean, Brian Eno and David Bowie, obviously.
Yeah, but the best ones.
Yeah, but they didn't pay the repair for a band bus.
Yeah, that is interesting. But yet, I think those albums have found such a massive audience now. Looking at your monthly listens, I know I hate doing stuff like that, but the other day I was looking through some stats on the internet, and I was like, people fucking love Noi, and people love Harmonia, and that must be a really nice feeling to have this connection now after so much time has gone by.
Yeah, I don't know these statistics, but yeah.
It's better not to know.
Okay, yeah, I actually know, of course, the feedback our early music has been getting in recent years, especially since, in the 90s it started, after the 80s were mostly my solo work, which it was strange. Actually, for me it was, I was fortunate, because after the mild success of Noi in the 70s, in the second half of the 70s, my solo work was suddenly so popular that, it paved the way financially, economically for all that time. The 80s were a bit otherwise for Noi and Harmonia difficult, because the record companies stopped distributing, pressing the albums, and they were out of the shops and seemingly out of circulation. And in the 90s, there were some first signals, like Julian Cope writing his book Krautrock Sampler with many, many mistakes. He apologized for them, but I understood. He said at that time he didn't have any ways of finding out the truth, because no internet, even with internet it's difficult to find the truth, but back then in the 90s, he just thought, oh, this must have been Klaus Dinger, this must have been Michael, and just jumping to conclusions. I remember clearly that in Germany, where people, journalists and magazines, media, were not at all interested in our music of the 70s, they started getting mildly interested when some journalists who followed the development presented the idea to the bosses, let's write this British musician, he's so famous and he loves our German guys, and
Now we're interested.
Yeah, sort of the indirect. It's ridiculous, and I hate it actually that they don't have their own opinion. Sure. But that's okay. I should calm down. Yeah.
I actually would love to hear your opinion on words like krautrock and motorik, because I wonder if that's is that an offensive term, krautrock, to you, or is it okay?
Well, I don't like it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And if you look at the origin of the word, the term, it was at least somehow mixed emotions in Britain, because the krauts were the German soldiers.
Yes.
And the media always talked about, when it was football, the krauts are coming. And so to connect us with German soldiers, Nazis, or First World War soldiers, that was already ridiculous for us, because we were all very anti-military. And I must say, there were also many other tags that were applied. And if you're willing to believe me or understand that it was always our idea, my idea, to be different, it doesn't make much sense to be put into a box with other musicians, because I didn't know much, but my clear idea was I needed to steer away from everyone.
Yeah.
And anyway, many years later, I think must have been in the 90s, when I was also in Australia, private mission back then, and also New York, other places I saw. And I noticed that this term was, and in talks with journalists, I noticed that this term was not meant in an ambiguous or strange way. It was just a term, technical term, sort of trying to team together a certain period of music from Germany, and leaving it up to the audience to find out the differences. It's like, I don't know, the Milky Way. Okay, get closer, and then you see they are very far apart, these
That's
stars.
Right. But it, I suppose there is quite a bit of a connection between some of the big players in that scene. You know, that obviously you played in Kraftwerk for a while. You played with Jackie from Cannes. You played with Cluster, you know, like, I suppose the big players in krautrock are sort of connected mostly through you, I would say. You're the key piece of krautrock.
Oh, connection. Jigsaw puzzle. We got it now. Yeah, I never thought of that in this way.
It's you in the center of krautrock.
Wow, terrible.
Hey.
But for me personally, of course, I was so fortunate to meet those people without knowing them, without knowing anything of them, and picking up a bass and jamming with Ralf Hütter, and suddenly realizing, oh, I'm not so alone as I thought I was, because before that meeting, I looked around and I didn't see anyone. Really, I was like I was on the moon, and with my idea of steering away from Anglo-American music tradition and the wish, which was not clearly defined, but like a deep-rooted wish to create something new, something different.
Yeah.
And so I was as if some element directed me into the Kraftwerk studio without me knowing, like, okay, Michael, now you're going to go there, and then let's see what happens.
That's so cool. It's like fate. It's fated.
Yeah, sort of. I think so. And I don't know what would have happened with me, with my musical ideas and dreams, if I hadn't met those people, because being in touch with Kraftwerk, working with them, I met Conny Planck, I met Klaus Dinger, and that sort of, that was the beginning of the whole journey, and meeting all these people through this first initial meeting.
I find it really interesting reading about that time, because to me it sounds as though there were some really large personalities that seemed difficult in the long term to sort of work with. You know, you talk about Klaus in this in a very fond way because you had a very long creative relationship with him. But you also say that you weren't friends, which is really interesting to me because I've been playing in bands for a long time. I've never played in a band with someone who wasn't my friend. How does that feel?
Yeah, I know. This is surprising for many people, for musicians and non-musicians. How can you work with someone who is not your friend? It was clear to both of us, Klaus Dinger and me, also in Kraftwerk, that we were individuals and we admired and needed the elements the other one or the other ones could contribute to the sound. And it was not based on, oh, I like your ideas about politics, art or whatever. Mm. It was really focused on music. And I mean, I've talked a lot about the problems I had with Klaus in later years when he got more and more estranged from the world. I mean, I don't want to go into
no,
many details.
No, we don't have to rehash that.
Yeah, but he was, in the beginning, he was a young man like me. I'm a bit older. He was, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years older, something like that. He was a very determined drummer, a kind of drummer I had never met, that with that kind of power and determination, and playing with Florian as a trio in Kraftwerk, who was also crazy. I mean, he was on the same school. I knew him from sight. He was a total outsider. He was a weirdo, maybe people would say. Yeah, it was the late 60s. My hair were growing longer. Florian was wearing a traditional folky jacket and had short hair and walked in a funny way, played in the classical orchestra, the flute. So I didn't talk to Florian much about his feelings. And I think also with Klaus, we concentrated on music. But I know I met his father, his mother, and his siblings. So I know a little bit of the atmosphere. And so he was under a lot of pressure, I think, the father of a famous architect, doing great projects, the airport of Tehran and big houses, skyscrapers. And yeah, I think, okay, maybe I shouldn't talk too much about Florian.
Yeah. But what were your parents doing? Did you have parental pressure?
No, not at all. No. Mm. My mother was a classically trained piano player.
Oh, beautiful.
But yes, the tragedy in her life was she loved music and she would have loved to become a professional piano player, but that was the difficult economical crisis of the 30s. And she, you know, you never know whether she would have managed to survive as a professional player, but she had to go to the office to get money to support her family.
Of course.
The father was kicked out of his state business because he commented in a negative way about the Nazis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, things like that.
When you were growing up, when you were a young adult, Düsseldorf seemed to be quite a progressive area. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the 60s were a time of big changes. Mm. When my family and I came back from Pakistan in 1963, I remember clearly there were progressive teachers and old school teachers, like the Latin teacher who just shouted, "Everybody sit down, we're writing a test now." Yeah. And my nerves were, my bones were shaking.
Aww.
Yeah, and they had already started learning. And okay, this is very personal, but he pushed me. He said, "If you don't understand this, why don't you go back to Pakistan?" Things like that.
That's awful.
Yeah, that very old school, like Prussian officer type of, but I learned German language through Latin.
Wow.
All the grammar, all the construction of logic, I learned because I lacked the 4 years of German schooling. And so that was a tough time. Mm. Yeah. And then tragedy struck. My father died in 65. And my brother moved from Munich to Düsseldorf to support my mother and me. And that was the time of great music exploding in England, especially. And my love for music, it was already there. My brother, who was 10 years older, he had introduced me to rock and roll when I was 7 or 8. So I still loved Little Richard, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I saw the documentary on the flight
over. It's so good, isn't it?
Oh, I get shakes because I get so excited. And imagining the pressure, a gay black person in the 50s in the south of the United States must have experienced, oh, this is the entrance only for white people. Mm-hmm. You have to go around the back, or you can't take this bus, or you can't do this. It makes me want to scream because it is so terrible what they experienced. The nastiness of these white supremacists.
Yeah.
And then picking up the challenge in music and making a music that is so full of joy and freedom and revolutionary spirit, even though he was talking about sex most of the time.
Well, that's joyous.
Oh, yes, right. But in a disguised way, I know. But the idea of I'm not being contained by you. I'm not being limited. I'm going through every wall that you put in front of me. I'm not stopping. You're
very
not going to stop me.
Mm.
Yeah, and that still works today.
Yeah. Well, do you feel like you had that kind of drive too? What are your feelings on the way that your music has developed and the drive for longevity?
Yeah, well, it's a big question, actually. I think to cut it down, I haven't thrown away my past, so it is like maybe circling a basic idea of music, coming up in different corners with different machinery, sound creation possibilities, but always circling around one main thing, which maybe I can't even put into words, but it has to do with beauty, with joy, with with all my feelings about liberation, for instance.
Yeah. The melodies that you come up with feel really European to me.
Hmm.
Do you hear that a lot?
Well, one of the things I had to drop when in the late 1960s, when I sort of started realizing that I couldn't become Jimi Hendrix because he was already there and all the other heroes of my early days were already there, and the world wasn't waiting for a second version.
Yeah.
I mean, that was ran in parallel to what happened at school, reading philosophical texts and just becoming aware of identity, I guess. That's at the heart of it. So what's my identity and how do I express that in music? And so that led to this at least year-long crisis when I knew I had to forget the past, forget all these fast finger...
Forget to shred.
Movements. Yeah. What, guitar shredding? Well, I didn't shred the guitars. I was always a melody player. But the fast finger movements and the blues harmonies and all the structures, basically trying to create impressive harmony structures. Mm. And so I stopped that. I stopped listening to music. It was easy back then.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's quite not possible to not listen. And then I looked around and I was quite lost, I think. I had no real clue. I looked into jazz. That didn't work because of the feeling. It was not me. And then so we come back to this point where I met these other people and thought, yeah, I can relate to that, and they seem to like what I contribute, so let's take it from here.
You really brought such an amazing rhythm to all of that using your guitar. You know, there's obviously the octave rhythms that have been so inspirational to bands like Stereolab and other bands that I love.
I'm talking to a musician. I can hear that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I actually think that my introduction to Noi was actually through Stereolab, because I came to it much later, you know, and when I was a teenager probably. I listened to those first few Stereolab records and I loved them. You know, they were sort of a bit more noisy and raw back then. And then I read in an interview that they were inspired by Noi and Cluster and, you know.
Yeah, I met those people. We played together at a festival and my nine.
Yeah, the nine note.
That was, it's my invention.
Yeah. It's a great note.
Yeah, it's the tension which sort of lifts the basses, and yeah, I know, für immer, you can't think of it without the nine.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's so cool. I think you did invent that.
No, but for me it was, when I started working on music, I was so careful. Like I said, I threw away all these fast finger movements, which I didn't really understand what the meaning of each note was. It was just and then starting from one string, one note. What can I do with one note? One, and then the octave, and then the fifth. And at some point, a nine. I always loved the nine.
I'm a massive fan of your solo stuff. I think Flammende Herzen is one of the most played records in my house. You had a different vibe between Klaus Stinger and Jackie Leverzeit. Can you tell me a little bit about the difference between playing with those two drummers?
When I was in Kraftwerk, we had two concerts together with Can. So I was not, to be honest, I was not so impressed by their live performance, but I immediately, of course, it was impossible not to notice that Jackie Leverzeit was a brilliant drummer. And so he was always in my mind somewhere as one of the few drummers who could really be interesting. And so when, at the end of Harmonia in 1976, when Hans-Joachim Rödelius and Dieter Möbius gave up because the rejection was too brutal by the audience, we had no success, there was no money coming in. I was totally happy with the deluxe album. Thought, we should continue, but how? And they gave up, and so I was in the situation of, what am I going to do now? No band. I didn't want to work with Klaus then. That was sort of the end, Noi 75. And I had these ideas for recordings. I was in touch with Connie, and he trusted me. He gave me 2 weeks in his studio. And then I approached Jackie because I thought he would be the only drummer I could trust to play the right thing. And luckily, Jackie was totally eager and happy to go along. And I didn't have to do much talking again. We went to the recording room. Obviously, first I played him some sketches, which were very different from what happened on tape then, but gave him a basic idea, and because he was a good listener. And so when I played the rhythm guitar, Flammende Herzen, for instance, it was so amazing how his understanding of the different phases of that composition, where the tension mounts and where it gets to the next level, and he picked that up intuitively or as a wonderful musician. And then later I did the overdubs, all the guitar work on top, but that was working with Jackie. He was always a bit strange, a wonderful person, very quiet, very modest, but he kept very much to himself. I don't know, I love cats, so I'm not saying he was a cat, but in a way there were some similarities. Just this
that.
Is yeah, this is just a very personal statement now from me. He was great, and his drumming needed no explanation. It's his intuition was great. He understood where I was going, and it was quick. I think we recorded him in 3 days, did all the groundwork, and then I spent the next 5 days doing overdubs and then mixing. And Connie Plank, of course, can't talk about Flammende Herzen or Neu or Harmonia also without praising the skills and the talent of Connie Plank as a producer at the mixing desk. It is all totally logical. We saw each other as natural partners in what we wanted to do. For Connie Plank, we were the kind of musicians he needed, because he was also adventurous. He wanted to create new sounds, leave traditional music. He had to work sometimes on production with the traditional projects for the money, for the studio. But he loved experimenting with us. And so nothing was too outrageous for Connie. And he didn't need pushing. He just listened also. And Flammende Herzen, it's a good example. Connie also taught us tried to pass on knowledge to us so we could help him at the mixing desk and in the studio and in his own studio. He, when I did the overdubs, he just showed me how to plug from one to the other and then press a record and stuff. Then he went out and let me alone in the studio, and I spent hours recording melody lines and sort of got lost, confused. Mm. And then he came back after coffee or after spending some hours in the office. He said, "Michael, why don't you go for a walk?" And when I came back 20 minutes later, he had arranged all these elements which had confused me, these different melody lines which come from below and above and etc. And I said, "Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted."
And that's all on tape, so that's not as easy as it is now.
No, of course. Yeah. That, I mean, that is so impressive. If we talk about the first Neu album for a second, like Hallo Gallo, we recorded 11 minutes of basic track. So the song is now 10 minutes and 7 seconds or something like that. And I still don't understand. I can't imagine how, with what kind of brain area, he could memorize all these bits and pieces which were scattered on the tape. And because the song is so open, there's no clear structure. Okay, this is now the first chapter, this is the second. No, it was just one line running to the horizon.
Yeah.
It is. And he understood. He knew, like a conductor of an orchestra piece, and he knew it actually. I think he saw it, where this guitar, the backwards guitar, has to go into reverb, and when the forward guitar comes on top. And
incredible.
Yeah, that was, this is a mystery. I mean, the whole track is quite a mystery for me, how it happened.
Really?
Yeah, it is a mystery, because there are only these few elements, and suddenly it has a magic. I can say that because it's not only me, it's very important parts of Klaus and Connie. And the structure in itself is so frail. So if you just imagine you take away one piece, the house would collapse.
That's true.
And I don't know, this is one of the wonderful mysteries for me.
There's a bit in that song that sounds like it's being filtered through a synthesizer.
Quack, quack,
yeah.
Quack. That's Klaus playing. He was not a guitar player, he was a drummer back then. And he played a guitar like a drummer,
yeah,
with a wah-wah pedal.
Oh, cool.
That's him. Yeah, yeah. I know, it's very important. That was
it's so
manual.
Cool. It's manual filtration.
In later years, Klaus played guitar on Neu 75. By that time, he had already practiced playing guitar, and he played rhythm guitar like drums.
I was going to say, did he go to the nine?
No. He didn't dare that. No, that was mine. No, I think he just played very strong chords and rhythmical stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. So I've heard you talk about the word motoric, that you're not really a fan of that word. Well, last time I listened to an interview where you mentioned it and you went, oh, I shouldn't really say that word.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through your feelings on that?
All these tags really don't help. I mean, I think if Klaus were here, he would say that was my way of playing drums.
And yeah.
That's the way I play guitar, and he played drums, and it's not in a pool of collective projects like everybody playing that style. No, it's but motoric, I understand it. Okay, it is propulsive. It goes forward, and okay, yeah. There have been worse terms, motoric, but I think Klaus didn't like it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. All right, we'll drop it.
Oh.
Are you playing songs like Hello Gallo at the moment?
I think we have to.
You have to. It's
yes.
The hit.
It sort of is the hit. Yeah. But I have so many songs to choose from.
You do.
It's always a bit difficult. But
I bet. It's a long history of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are many. Like in a football team, there are many substitutes that are just waiting at the side to jump in and take over and prove that they're great, just as great.
Over the years, and I presume now too, you've been working with a lot of very intuitive people that you don't need to overly explain things to.
Not much theoretical blah blah going on with me. I wouldn't know where to start or what to say, really. No, the people I work with, I invite to join me, they usually know exactly where to go.
Mm.
And there are only small elements maybe that I point out or I would like to change, but basically it's all clear.
Mm.
Yeah, which reminds me of a nice thing with Jackie. When he came to Forst, we recorded Fernwärme in my studio. That was the first time I recorded also drums on my own, quite big-headed, I think. And then I had this idea of a certain way of playing, and he said, no, this is not possible. You cannot play it. But it was great what he played. So, like, this is the extent of discussion. Like,
No.
Yeah, and another example is when I recorded him twice on Silberstreif, the first track on the second side of Fernwärme. So you hear Jackie playing completely the whole drum kit twice, and then the very minimal shifts, they change the frequencies or the phasing sort of elements. It gives that track a very special feeling.
It does. Something else I wanted to talk to you about, because this person had a big role in my life as a kid. You have talked about Herbert Grönemeyer. He was a big German musician. I listened to him a lot with my parents when we lived in Deutschland.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big role in re-releasing all of your old noise stuff.
Everything. And Harmonia and my solo works.
That's amazing, because he seems like such a mainstream person. But he was obviously also political and also like had a sense of history of German music and underground.
I'm not sure if I know the whole truth, but there's a sad story actually to it. It was in the late 90s. His wife died and his brother.
Oh, wow.
Both within the span of a week. And Herbert didn't know any of our music at the time. And so he was living in London at the time with their two children, and he was totally unable to create music. But of course he was this, and still is, this big star, and being Herbert, a very energetic person with the desire to produce positive things. So he had this idea of doing his own record label, Grönland Records. And another coincidence, he was at this photo shoot in London, and the photographer, maybe it was Corwin, I'm not sure, but there was music put on by someone, and Herbert thought, what's that? It sounds interesting, strange. Yeah, these are two German guys. Oh, really? Yeah, they're called Neu. Oh, and where do you get them? Yeah, they're crazy. They're nuts. they fight all the time. Nobody can agree with them, and they... I mean, that's a story. I never was one of those nuts. I was...
you were caught in the nut net.
Yeah, sort of. And Herbert... And then he heard, okay, this is only available as bootleg because no legal release, and they don't want anyone to release, and they are crazy beyond belief. And Herbert took the challenge. He thought... But this is important. He followed up on the music and thought, this has to be released, and I will convince these guys. I'm a musician. I can talk to them in a different way than a executive of a record company. And that's what he did. And he spent really 1.5 years, I think, talking to Klaus individually, then to me, and then... Mm. We met in London, we met in Hamburg, we met at the three of us, taking his time and
like
focusing.
A mediator.
Yeah, like a psychologist,
wow.
Even. Yeah, trying to find out what's wrong with these guys or what's wrong with the situation. I mean, he had to be fair, and I think he knew that there was nothing wrong with me. yeah, that's what the craziest people say. And in the end, he managed to convince Klaus, who was in big, deep trouble, financial trouble, and he needed one big deal to solve financial problems. That was only one part. But he also, I think, because he talked to us like a musician, like an artist, with respect and patience and everything, and was willing to invest also a big, big heap of money. Mm. So he had the... capability. He was not like, I mean, all the other record company people like Mute Records. Mm. I liked him, but he had the calculator in his mind. How many records can
sure.
I sell, and
yeah.
how much can I give them? And Herbert had a different approach. He also had this level of, this is historically important. This has to be released, and what I can do it, I can afford to invest that money and the energy, and what has to be done will be done. And he
God,
came.
The world needs more people like him.
Yeah, I mean, the tragic story is that everything started with his tragedy, but he came across all the way. He signed a contract that no record executive would have signed, giving us all the power of denying things the record company usually wants to do. We had to approve everything, really everything.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. It was difficult for me. I nearly went crazy again when Klaus said no to everything.
Oh,
we
no.
fought over semicolons and...
Whoa.
Yeah, at some point I had to say no to all this craziness. And Klaus is no longer here. He would say, yeah, Michael just didn't understand.
Yeah.
So he would have a different explanation, I know. But it's a very funny story. But later, they told me, much later, months later, a week before the release date, Klaus called Herbert and asked him, Herbert, will you stop the release or should I go to a lawyer?
What the fuck?
Yes. And that is true. And Herbert, at that point, took the right decision. He said to his record label boss, to the executive, close your eyes, close your ears, just go.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. Yeah, I think it was about losing control that drove Klaus mad.
Sure.
And then it was so beautiful. The fans were happy, good sounding pressings, and they were around the world, and we sold more, and of course then in 30 years before, and since then everything has gone from there. Like Groenland also took the Harmonia catalog from Universal with my help. We could wrangle Harmonia out of Universal. They didn't know what they had. They didn't care for stuff like that. And then also my solo work. Yeah. Everything is now with Groenland Records.
That's amazing.
I'm very grateful to those people.
Yeah. I suppose that when you're playing these songs now and there's all this history of, you know, Klaus being difficult but also being a very important person in your past, do you think about him while you're playing Noi songs now?
Actually, I do think a lot about Klaus. I think about Dieter Möbius, who's also no longer here. He was with me on my last tour.
Yeah, I was at that show because my brother Merkel was touring with you.
Yeah, that was great. Yes, so yeah, I when I play these songs like Harmonia tonight, I decided not to play Deluxe, but yeah, we can't. We have to. The substitutes are pushing from the sidelines.
Anything from Flammende Herzen?
Yes, great. I won't say.
That's okay then.
No, but of course these people are on my mind all the time, and I really hope that I manage to be fair also to Klaus, because of course he was very, 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 very difficult in the end. I know that he was a vital element in my musical development and everything. So he's everywhere. And Dieter Möbius too. And I sometimes dream of Dieter. So he appears. So it's, that I guess that is more friendly, emotional connection, but also musically very important, all these memories.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's so sad that so many of them are no longer with us. But you get to keep their memory alive by playing this beautiful music. And I'm so looking forward to seeing it tonight.
I hope you'll enjoy.
I'm going to ask you my last question, which is the question that I ask everyone I interview. What is your strangest show experience or the strangest thing that's happened to you because you play music?
One story that comes to my mind, we were playing in China last year, and it was near the Chinese Wall in the mountains. And in the morning, there were heavy rains the day before. And on the day of our concert, the sun was shining, and we thought, we are lucky. So did the sound check, etc. And then when we were supposed, it was a festival, we were supposed to get ready to go on stage, dark clouds came and they were threatening. And then suddenly the first flashes of lightning in the distance. And then we thought, okay, well, let's just hope for the best. And we went on stage. And the funny thing was, the projection screen was huge. I've never played to such a huge screen, like 40 meters high or something, but no roof over and it was out of doors on a lawn.
That's like Taylor Swift big. That's a massive screen.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And so we started the first song, Always Looking at the Sky, played the second song, and at the final chord of the second song, I won't say the name of the song for obvious reasons, I thought, what's that hitting the stage floor? It was, that's hail.
Oh, no.
Big tennis balls or...
golf balls.
Golf balls of hail. And then it started raining and the storm kicked in. And the people weren't prepared for rain.
Oh, no.
It was impossible. I covered my gear like a mother covers the baby and protects the baby. It was raining and everything was flying.
Oh, my God.
And end of story.
Yeah.
Concert was over.
Oh, that's terrible.
Funny thing is the people cheered and were happy. And, I mean, they were sad that we stopped, but they didn't boo or anything. Oh. It was just, but that was really crazy, this situation in the mountains, and the you saw the elements, the power of the elements in the sky, and they came down.
Wow. Yeah, that's never good with electronic equipment.
Right. But nothing was nothing damaged. Happened. They gave us little trash bags to cover
good.
The gear.
Yeah. Useful with hail.
Yeah, and torrential rain.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm always scared because I play old synths on stage. So anyway, thank you so much for talking to me, and I hope you enjoy your little felt Fairlight.
Well, this will get a special place. It's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Oh, we didn't even get to talk about your album Lust, but
right.
That's
next
what inspired
time.
The yes. Fairlight, and I love that album, and I'm so excited to see you play. I know you probably won't play anything off that album because I don't imagine you'll have your Fairlight with you.
Nope.
All right, thank you.
Right, thank you.